across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Tuesday morning, the 16th of July, 2024. Another beautiful day to have you here up north. Live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the Civic Media app, on social media, but not you anymore, Twitter, and on demand by podcast. Thank you for taking us along on your day. I got a question for you. Did J.D. Vance remember to ask Trump's VP screeners why the current position happens to be available? I think that's job interviewing 101. I hope they've been able to talk that out. If you'd like to comment on Trump's new running mate, whatever happened to the old one? You can call or text us at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC, and talk more about day one of the Republican National Convention. We're going to talk to Rick Wilson from the Lincoln Project coming up later this morning about that. Also, since we last spoke after the show yesterday, the Trump-appointed judge in Florida, who had been making all kinds of weird little rulings and utterances that clearly showed a pro-Trump bias, well, just threw out the entire case. You remember all those boxes and boxes of national security secrets and sensitive information about spies and things like that that were just strewn about in bathroom boxes and up on a stage someplace behind a curtain where anybody could get access to it. You know, one of the easiest things to prove. Well, judge said, no, we're just going to throw that whole thing out. Based on a reason, by the way, that courts for decades have rejected. But she said, nah, I want to do it this way. So it doesn't mean the case is dead. It just means it's delayed even further. And so former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel is going to come in on a Tuesday instead of normally on Friday and talk to us more about that and suggest what might be the best path forward for a case that still strikes me as lacking a sense of urgency, given the secrets involved and what Trump may or may not have disclosed by this time. A reminder as well, along with the phone number 855-75-CIVIC, that you can call us or text us here. You can email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can put a question in the comment section, and we'll see it and maybe put it here as well. Temperatures around Wisconsin at 6 a.m. on this July 16th look like this. Lake Wissota, we're at 65 here right now. Hayward's at 60. Park Falls, 55. Wausau, 64. Green Bay, 68. La Crosse at 70. Wisconsin Rapids, 67. Oshkosh, 73 already. Madison, 72. And it is 66 degrees in Waukesha, where we find one Greg Bach, who is an even busier man than usual this week with the Republican National Convention, which I saw had you on location with Ms. Mattinari yesterday. So you had the joy of driving into downtown Milwaukee during a big event. Mr. Bach, good morning. And how was day one down there of the convention?
Well, first, Pat, it's good to RNC ya.
Oh.
You can't go anywhere. I control everything. No, actually,
take those jokes.
Yeah, so actually what was interesting is I wasn't stressing about it, but I was thinking about it for days. Like, do I take 43 northbound and then get off on North or Locust? Is there construction? There's got to be construction. There's always
the
construction. The Californians. Look it up. It's a reference too deep for me to explain. But it was easy getting there. It was easy to park because I go around downtown along the lakefront and then come back up along the east side. So there was no traffic. There was no like police presence where we were at. The most police presence I saw was the Coast Guard monitoring the river. So I feel very, very lucky that it's going to be an easy drive. Hopefully, fingers crossed, for the next 3 days, because we're going to be on location for the next 3 days. Live with a wonderful view of Pfizer Forum.
from a shared office space that Up North News was going to be using for the Democratic convention 4 years ago. I'd gone and scouted out the area. I thought that was just the perfect place to be. Great backdrop for the shots. And then COVID hit. And so I'm jealous for you. But on the other hand, I'm also 4 years older and I'm a little bit more tired. And I'm a little bit more like, yeah, you guys go ahead and do it. I'm fine up here. I'm doing all right.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's fun. I've never done anything like this before. If you know me, you know that I don't have a multiple decades long history in the radio world. So it's like, oh, we're going to be broadcasting from this place and you get a wonderful backdrop of the city. And so it's fun. We're having a good time and we're going to be talking a lot about Mr. Judah Vance because I have thoughts on that man. So,
oh, good. Well, we're going to share all that. In fact, let's just get into it right here because you know the first note that I made. Now, I'm somebody who has read. I read Hillbilly Elegy, his book that got so famous right after Trump was elected, to try to explain what was the appeal of Trump, especially you know this guy who claims to be a billionaire for all sorts of lower income white Americans. What's the appeal? I read the book. I still didn't get the appeal. I saw a guy who was extremely full of himself.
Yeah.
And who was very quick to, you know, cast doubts and blames on others. And ever since then, he still strikes me as a guy who has only one mode, white guy with grievances.
Yep.
JD Vance has one mode.
Yeah.
White guy with grievances. And the things that he has uttered ever since, he does start to do what you would call saying the right thing, saying, well, you know, we have to be, well, like Ron Johnson last night at the convention, how he had promised his speech was going to be about, you know, being united and coming together. And instead it was all full of invective. And afterwards his aide said, oh, that was the wrong speech we loaded in the teleprompter. In other words, we didn't mean to tell you what we really think, but he did. And J.D. Vance will occasionally again start that way saying, oh, well, we really need to come together and see things my way. And it's not going to work that way.
So you're telling me that at the RNC, it's the Olympics of politics for your party, you loaded the quiet thought speech into the teleprompter? Okay, cool.
Exactly
cool. Cool. Yeah. Then who gets fired then? Who gets fired on that staff? Because that is not that's a monumental mistake. That's not a,
well, much like Trump does with other teleprompter malfunctions, he just says, we're not going to pay that guy, you know, talking about the crew, you know, at Pfizer Forum or whatever. So they're going to stiff somebody is really what it's going to come down to.
Their union, they're getting paid.
Yeah, exactly. Again, it's just empty words.
Yeah, and the thing for me with J.D. Vance that will always stick with me, and it's a sticking point with him, and then it's a question for the Trump base, which is, first of all, J.D. Vance made a name for himself on bashing Trump for a long time. I mean, anti-Trumper, saying some pretty poisonous things about the man. Then he's like, all right, maybe this guy will be the shining light out of the GOP that leads them away from this. And then one day he's just like, I like him. He's a good guy. He's really nice. And so the question I have then for the Trump base is, why don't you... Why do you trust him then? Because they seem to be so... Trump is the only person they fully and 100% trust. Everybody else is just on the verge of losing their faith and their loyalty from him if they say anything or do anything. This guy came out of the gate bashing the former president, and they're like, yep, we love him. He's great. He's our guy. Okay, what did he do besides kiss the feet?
Nothing. Nothing.
So that's
He's been senator for a hot 10 minutes, okay? And that's it. That's his experience. He's been a senator for a year and a half. He would be the least experienced president. And he brings nothing to the table, you know? Mm-hmm. He doesn't bring you Ohio, which was already there. And he doesn't bring you any demographic other than, again, white guys with grievances.
Yeah.
But here's what he does bring to the table.
Sorry.
All right. Here's what he does bring. He says of abortion ban exceptions for victims of rape and incest, that such situations are simply inconvenient. He says, we want women to have opportunities, we want women to have choices, but above all, we want women and young boys in the womb to have a right to life. In other words, women, ladies, you are nothing but a vessel. Your happiness, your financial security, your personal safety must take a back seat because your uncle raped you. Sorry, it sounds inconvenient, according to J.D. Vance, but now you must carry this forced pregnancy to term. Oh, wait, there's more. He also thinks women should stay in violent marriages. Here's his quote on that. And this wasn't some quote taken out of context. He was addressing a Christian high school in California when he said, this is one of the great tricks that I think the sexual revolution pulled on the American populace, which is the idea that, like, well, okay, these marriages were fundamentally, you know, they were maybe even violent. Certainly they were unhappy. And so getting rid of them and making it easier for people to shift spouses like they change their underwear, that's going to make people happier in the long term. And maybe it worked out for some moms and dads, though I'm skeptical, he said. But it really didn't work out for the kids of those marriages, he said. Really? Really? Leaving violent marriages didn't work out for the kids, in your view? Your message to battered women is, suck it up, buttercup? And one more. J.D. Vance is all in, and was all in, on Trump's criminal scheme to overturn the will of the American voters in 2020. He said the results shouldn't have been certified until more states, submitted fake electors for consideration. And that Trump should ignore any U.S. Supreme Court rulings he considers to be illegitimate. He told George Stephanopoulos, if I'd have been vice president, I'd have told states like Pennsylvania and Georgia that we need to have multiple slates of electors and the U.S. Congress should fight over it from there. That's the legitimate way to deal with an election that a lot of folks like me think had a lot of problems in 2020. I think that's what we should have done. Well, except that there were no problems. And no, you don't fight over it from there with fake elector slates. You don't get to declare non-existent problems for the sake of maybe strong-arming your way into a fraudulent outcome. Oh, and there's more about J.D. Vance on the economy, on Project 2025, on all the times he likened Trump to Hitler and other bad things, his lack of experience. But basically, all you need to know is he brings to the ticket blind loyalty on behalf of all other white guys with grievances. Much more to come, I'm sure. We'll mark a Barry Manilow milestone in today's history lesson coming up and hear from Sherita Booker about social media posts on Up North News here on Up North News Radio next. Okay, it's time to take a break from all the convention talk and other politics and talk to Sherita Booker, our social media manager, who puts all manner of content up on Facebook, Instagram, and all the rest. Sherita, how are you?
Good, Paul. How are you?
Well, okay. I mean, I think we're all already dealing with convention overload here, and so it's nice to be reminded that the world goes on outside of the convention zone. And that includes, you know, another big event that's coming up. That, of course, would be the Paris Olympics. And while Milwaukee won't have the attention that it has during the convention, Milwaukee definitely has a star who will be in action at the Paris Games on behalf of his home country. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, Giannis Antetokounmpo is making Wisconsin proud yet again. He will be the first Black athlete to carry Greece's flag during the open ceremonies of the Paris Olympics. He'll also be the first athlete down the scene, which is Greece is always the first one in the nation to walk. So he'll be the first of both this year. And that post had more than 1,000 likes on Facebook. Chris said, pure kid from a rough Greece neighborhood. We love Giannis. And Barbara said, I wish him well and hopefully healthy when he comes back to Milwaukee. Go Bucks, go.
So let me see if I got this straight. So instead of the parade of nations, and Greece always comes in first, so Giannis would be first because he's carrying the Greek flag, but instead of a usual stadium track, he's going to be floating down the Seine instead. They're going to float the parade of nations?
Yep, they're going to float it.
That is very cool. All right, looking forward to seeing that, and obviously having him to cheer for, along with, you know, Team USA, of course, in Olympic basketball. So a lot to see when the Paris Games get underway. Let's bring it back into Wisconsin proper. And, I mean, a real institution in terms of gathering places near the state capitol in Madison. Tell us about a very familiar sight and scene for folks down there that's going to be going away.
Yep, 42-year-old Essen House run by Bob Work will close sometime this year and replaced by apartments, unfortunately. The German Beer House is known for its 16 authentic beers on tap, German beers, that is. And there's a boot-shaped glass where you can drink beer out of, which is really cool, and people love that. The post had more than 1,000 likes on Facebook, and Donna said, "Pam, we need one last boot. Oh, why couldn't we have done that this summer?" And Erica said, "Now it feels like a couple lifetimes ago, but I had one of my best nights there ever. We stayed at a B&B nearby, and I did not conquer the boot. Had fun trying, though. Sad to see this unique place or this piece of Madison's personality go away."
Oh, it's so true. I mean, you've lost that, you know, the silver dollar. And look, places come and go. I get that, even ones that have been around for decades. But Essen House is, it definitely has its own character. It tells you something about the demand for housing, that apartments are going to take its place because, again, the city is growing by leaps and bounds. That's where so much job growth is going on. But all those folks coming into those areas are going to be looking for restaurants and watering holes and all kinds of other places. It's a shame that Essen House won't be one of them, but, you know, circle of life, I guess. Right, Sharina?
Absolutely.
Yep. All right, well, let's end on a nice note, and we're getting back to sports here. Long before there was a Giannis, there was a Bart Starr, and there's now a place that gives him his due, proper honors beyond just the Football Hall of Fame.
Yep, so the Starr Museum honoring Bart Starr and his wife, Cherry, has officially opened in New London. And the museum will have things like NFL memorabilia, Bart's MVP Corvette, and also handwritten love letters from the two since they were high school sweethearts. And they were married for more than 60 years before Bart died in 2019. And Cherry passed earlier this year. That post had almost 2,000 likes on our Facebook. And Bonnie said, "We were there last week. It's very interesting about the Stars and also about the mission and history of Rawhide." Dan said, "I'll never forget this day. It was the first time meeting Bart Starr. What an honor." And then it's a picture of him in black and white throwback. And he says that he's on the right. But if you check out our comments, you can see a throwback picture of Bart Starr with our commenter, Dan.
Oh, very nice. Look, obviously still a place in our hearts. Although I got to say, and again, they're married 60 plus years and they're, you know, Bart's a legend. But still the notion that all these years later, as high school sweethearts, your love letters are going to be put on display. I mean, on the one hand, it's touching. And on the other hand, it's like, I don't know, Sharita. Would you want your love letters put on display later on after you're gone?
It depends what I said in them.
Well, actually, that raises a different topic entirely. Love letters. I mean, who writes those out anymore? What's the museums of the future going to have? Are they going to print out emails? Are they going to have, you know, Snapchat videos? I don't know what the youngins are doing for love letters these days, Sharita.
Right. I mean, I guess maybe some text messages back and forth, perhaps. I guess that's what it's going to get.
Oh, and I think of the poetry and prose in a love letter, and we're replacing it with LOL. Oh, my goodness. Oh, well. And heart emojis and everything else. Well, you know, that's it for this really romantic go-round of communication and social media posts with our social media manager, Sharita Booker. Sharita, thanks as always. Have a good day.
You too, Pat.
I can't. I mean, here's the snap I sent your grandma back in the day. Grandpa, you have no clothes on. Come on! Love and letters!
Here is the text message I sent your grandma when I knew she was the one. You up?
Sup?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. So, look, if you take nothing out of this, apart from a whole
Please,
lot of mockery.
Take nothing out of this. I'm just kidding.
If you take nothing else out of this, if there is somebody special in your life right now, especially not so much to the married people. I mean, you're in. You're good. If there's somebody you're really digging on, to use an old man word, send them a note.
Yeah.
Put it in writing.
And use some flowery language. You know, use some.
Yeah.
My dearest, my beloved, the apple
you
of
smell
my
good.
Eye. You don't stink.
I like your flavor of Axe body spray too, Wyatt. You know, so, I don't know.
Oh man, you smell like the woods.
Christina Lurie's coming up in a bit, and she wants to talk about the All-Star Game, which is fine. So let me say that what she put in the newsletter this morning is about today being National Cherry Day, which I forgot to make the connection until I saw the newsletter this morning, to Door County. That Door County is a cherry hotspot, but it was not always that way. She writes, when the first farmers arrived up north in the mid-1800s, they encountered unusually stony soil there. They figured out that apple trees would grow well. Then they tried some other fruit crops and found that a particularly tart type of cherry, we'll put say that three times fast, grew especially well in Door County. The first Cherry Blossom Festival was in 1929. It was a huge success. By the time the local cherry industry peaked in 1950, as many parts of the world were still recovering from the war, farmers in Door County were producing 10% of the world's supply of cherries. So you can learn about that and obviously some of the news of the day as well in our daily newsletter. You can sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Though, as I've said before, I've never spent more than a couple of hours in Door County just going in for like an event or a dinner or something, and have never like spent a weekend. Got to do that one of these days.
We were talking about doing this year for our anniversary, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we're kind of mapping out like fall colors for this later this year and things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that'll be on the list. So, All right, the aforementioned Ms. Lurie joins us with the Uplift. We'll talk a little baseball, and then we'll have today's history lesson and much more coming up on Up North News Radio for this Tuesday morning.
Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is the power of the car key.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio, where I was hoping to hear Christina Lurie there, but...
My mistake. Here we go. Sorry about that.
Okay. Here we go. Now it's time for the Uplift. Here's Christina Lurie. She puts together our newsletter. You can sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. Just some of the lighter news on, again, like I said last segment, is often a heavy political week with the conventions and everything else, but there is also an All-Star Game going on in baseball to take our minds off of some of the other things happening in news world. Christina Lurie, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Pat?
Good, thanks. So we've got the Midsummer Classic, as they call it, going on tonight in Arlington, Texas. We've got a couple of Brewers who, of course, are very deserving of being there tonight, but maybe a couple who are deserving and are not there as well, especially for a team that is in first place and overachieving by pretty much every standard that's out there. Christina, what's your own impression of the Brewers and tonight's All-Star game?
Yeah, we're at that point in the season where people can't, it's no longer a streak. The Brewers aren't streaky. They're having a really good season because I live in the comment section a little too much sometimes, and I've noticed all along people are saying, you know, watch, by the All-Star break, they'll tank. Well, we've seen by now that didn't happen, and the Brewers will also be really well represented on the field with two starters, both Yelich and Contreras, and they both won overwhelmingly, which is awesome because out of all of the markets in baseball, Milwaukee is by far the smallest, and the All-Star game, as you know, is usually just a popularity contest. So it's nice to see the entire country rally behind both Contreras as catcher and then Yelich in the outfield. Yelich got the most votes of any outfielder He got 21% of the total vote. And then Contreras got 60% of all catchers' votes, both well-deserved. But you mentioned when you tossed over to me, Pat, that there are some Brewers that deserve to be in the game that aren't there. Mm-hmm. Who sticks out in your mind?
Well, actually, the two big ones would be Bryce Terang, who is second in the majors in stolen bases. And yet, as one news report says, he's the one who got robbed when it comes to being in the game. He's improved on all of his offensive categories. He was already well known for his defensive prowess in the infield. And then the other is Trevor Megill. This is a pitching roster that has been just decimated with injuries. So when closer Devin Williams went down over spring training with an injury, and we all thought, well, that's it. You know, the season's lost. And instead, Trevor Megill is given the job. And he has, we try not to get too stat heavy here, but we got to make the case for the All-Star game. Trevor Megill's converted 18 out of 19 save opportunities. And he is holding opposing batters to a batting average of .202 and has given up just one home run so far the season. So those are the top two that come to mind that, again, are on a very deserving team. Keep this in mind. There were no Brewers that played in last year's All-Star game. Devin Williams opted out, and Corbin Burnes did not get called out of the bullpen. So, you know, we have to take the good with the bad. There have been some snubs, but we've really come up from a year ago.
And I'd also make the case for Joey Ortiz has been having a fabulous season. So has Brian Hudson. I know that he had a tough California road trip this last time, but before that, his ERA has been under one pretty much the whole season. And pretty much the weight of the entire pitching staff has been on his shoulders. So those were the biggest standouts for me. But if I had to say, my number one would be Terang not being on that. It's just crazy. He's only 24 years old. If you want to feel old, just look up the ages of your favorite baseball player.
It's so true. And it just gets more true with each passing year. I looked this up for a little bit of trivia here. A number of Brewers who have been selected to play in the All-Star game. Any idea?
Total
over the years. How many Brewers?
Well, there needs to be at least one a season. And the Brewers became a team in the early 70s, is that right?
Yep, 50 plus years here.
Okay, I'm going to go 75.
Very good, more than 70 have been part of the team. So, you know, and some years we were filled to the brim. I think back to 2018 when you had Yelich, you had Josh Hader, Jesus Aguilar, Jeremy Jeffress, and Lorenzo Cain. You know, so you have these years kind of feast or famine. And then you look up, of course, the Home Run Derby is a big deal now as part of the All-Star break. Eight different Brewers have taken part in that. Of course, only one Brewer has won the Home Run Derby.
I know.
Even a White Sox fan knows this one, right?
Prince Fielder,
absolutely. Yeah. Won it in 2009. So, you know, there's always that reason to tune in for your local team, except last year, of course. And we get to this, to get decidedly away from statistics and other wonky things. The uniforms. For a million years, it was every team just wore their own uniform. And then it was, well, we'll have them all in, you know, the same uniform that says American or National on it. And some years they look okay, and some years they look space age, and some years they look embarrassing. I actually have not seen this year's uniforms or anything, so I'm going to be surprised when I see it in the game. Okay, I don't know if that's something you even notice.
No. Don't get your hopes up, because I did see the big uniform reveal. I think they revealed it over 4th of July weekend. That was the first time I had seen it. Mm-hmm. My initial reaction was that the Brewers are getting the better end of the deal being in the NL. I thought the NL jerseys are fine. The AL are absolutely hideous. But that's just my own personal opinion.
Well, no.
I don't think they consulted a woman or anyone with style when making these.
See, now you're making me have to look, and I can't.
While you look, another interesting topic that always comes up around the All-Star game, we were talking about snubs. Mm-hmm. There was a really interesting article that the Journal Sentinel put together this week of five standouts from the 15 best brewers who were never All-Stars, but they were standouts on the field regardless. Adamas was the only current brewer that they put on their list. I think they made a mention, recency bias. They didn't want to add any others on there.
Okay.
But there are some big names that were never All-Stars. John Axford, Sal Bando, Chris Bosio, John Briggs, Mike Caldwell, Rob Deere, Cal Eldred, Jim Gantner, Daryl Hamilton. I mean,
Rob Deere, really?
Impressive people.
Wow. Okay, I'm looking at the uniforms now, and okay. You're right. The American League one looks just downright old timey, in a way that,
and not in a good way, because I do appreciate the throwbacks, but it is not cute.
No, it's much older colors. The beige is a very, again, old timey beige compared to the black and aqua of the National League uniforms here. And
for people not looking at it, the beige, it looks like it was initially a different color and they played way too many games in the summer heat and it got faded.
Yeah. Yep. It's basically like that. Look, it's all a marketing game, and I'm looking at pretty much, down the road here, you can get these for $69.99. So if for $70, we've sold you on looking like one of these players, then you can go ahead and get it that way. But I wouldn't mind if they just went back to the old uniforms. That's just fine with me. Do you have from a Chicago standpoint, do you have any memories of players from years gone by that you couldn't wait to see, got excited to see in the All-Star game?
Well, I remember going to the 2003 All-Star Game that we hosted, because I believe that was the 50th anniversary of the All-Star, or it was some anniversary of the All-Star Game.
Okay.
The Sox hosted the first one ever. And that year, like most years, the Sox only had one player in it. It's kind of a thing that tends to happen with the White Sox. But the White Sox, I actually was surprised. So they used to, I think they discontinued it in 2018, but they used to have this like last call vote thing where fans could get in one player, and they had a list of like eight players you could vote for. And several White Sox got in that way. So apparently they have diehard fans that just want to get players in at the last minute. But growing up, my first favorite player, I think pretty much every kid's favorite player because he was on backyard baseball, was Frank Thomas.
Oh, of course.
Then I really liked Paul Konerko from early on. I mean, he grew in, his number's not retired by the Sox, but I claimed him early. I claimed him with his first season with the team. And then a little bit later on, I just really loved having Jim Thome on the Sox. I know that he's mainly an Indian, but he just did had this resurgence with the Sox that was cool. And he was at the point in his career where he was hitting a lot of milestones with the Sox. Like, I think he had his 600th career homer. Mm-hmm. And he was just such a nice guy. He would always, if you'd shout down to him on the field, he would always like wave at you and smile. And, you know, as a kid, that sticks out to you.
The one thing to keep in mind, if folks don't know, it was around for, well, actually, that game that you mentioned was the first time that the winner of the All-Star game determined which league's team got home field advantage for the World Series.
Yes, and you know why that was, because the year before was the world's worst All-Star game.
Yep.
Hosted at Miller Park.
Yep.
Which didn't end. And people were so mad.
Ended in a tie, Bud Selig. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that his reputation ever fully recovered from that debacle. So, yeah, the next year it was, hey, the winner gets the World Series. And they finally did away with that in 2016 because it was, I mean, for years and years and years, the National League or the American League would win year after year after year, the first seven years in a row that they did it. And it just didn't seem fair anymore. So I admire the effort, but I'm glad that that's not the rule anymore.
You know, considering the Sox's only World Series in my lifetime was 2005, and they won it in four games. So I actually would have liked if that rule didn't exist and the Sox hadn't had home field advantage, because then they would have won the World Series at home. So it's a little less fun when you win it on the road.
Yeah, it's true.
But if you're a Sox fan or if you're a Brewers fan, you can't be picky.
No, that's what I was getting at, is especially this year, Sox fans cannot be picky about that at all. All right, well, we've got a game to watch, and we've got some players to watch and others that I think we should look for in future games. I'm thinking Bryce Turang might be a regular presence at this game, you know, after this year's snub. Fingers
and
crossed.
And Devin Williams was back on the mound over the weekend for the first time this season, so he's with the Timber Rattlers still, but we can expect him. And, you know, when you think all-star, you think Airbender.
Yeah, without a doubt. Christina Laurie, thank you so much for a little update on the all-star game. And again, by and large, you'll see her work every weekday morning in your inbox as she puts together our daily newsletter that you can sign up for over at our homepage. Christina, thanks so much. Have a great day. As if we needed a reminder about the Milwaukee All-Star game.
That was before my days of loving baseball, but even I was like, ooh, this is bad.
it was awkward. I mean, there was, if you're going to use the word awkward about anything in baseball, that might be at or very near the top of the list.
Absolutely.
But you can't talk about the All-Star game without talking about the Home Run Derby. So here's how I'm going to talk about the Home Run Derby. I didn't watch it. It looked really boring in the beginning. The format looked, because they always tweak it year after year, and I guess somebody on the Dodgers won it, and that's great. But apparently what everybody's talking about is the national anthem rendition, which apparently is one of the worst that was ever given. I don't know the person. I don't want to trash the person. I will say I tried to listen, and after about 10 or 12 seconds, I said, no, that's okay. I'm good. You know, so maybe we'll cue that baby up and hear what this poor woman had to add herself to the pantheon of forgettable national anthems. Oh, no. Did you find it?
I did, but it just says Ingrid Andress national anthem before MLB home run leaves impression.
Yes, definitely left an impression. Maybe we'll catch that as part of today's history segment that is coming up next here on Up North News Radio for this Tuesday morning. Back after this, I'm Pat Kreitlow. There's a section of the population who either owned or their little sister owned Barry Manilow Live.
I didn't.
Of course you didn't, you youngin'. But anybody of that age remembers this very blue album cover. He's in kind of a blue jumpsuit, and it's Barry Manilow Live! Anyway, that album was the number one album this day in 1977, which tells you what a young and innocent and carefree time it was. Look at this. I'm already swaying to the music. It's the goofiest damn song on the album. And over here going, hey, it's Daybreak.
But he can do that. He can write a song about anything. Like, hey, there's a rabbit on the street. It makes me feel good. Like, they're like, yep, that's Barry Manilow. He can do whatever he wants. He can write whatever song he pleases.
Of course, he's done show tunes. He's done Cole Porter tunes. This could just as easily be that. And, you know, so good on him. The man's made a couple of bucks in his time, in part because of that mega album at the time. On this day in 1941, Joe DiMaggio hit safely in the 56th consecutive game, a streak that still stands as an MLB record. And that's kind of a timeline cleanser for us. Let's forget about the Milwaukee All-Star game long enough to remember Paul Molitor chasing Joe DiMaggio's streak.
Oh, yeah.
Those were good times. If you saw Oppenheimer on this day in 1945 in the Manhattan Project, the atomic age began with the detonation of a plutonium-based nuclear weapon in New Mexico. On this day in 1976, the then super team of Loggins and Messina, I mean, they were riding really high. They had a couple of different hits, including, well, this is arguably their biggest one. Thank you. So they decided on this day in 1976 to split up after 6 years together. It worked out all right for both of them, especially Kenny Loggins, who had become like Mr. Movie Soundtrack of the 1980s. On this day in 1956, Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus did its final big tent show in Pittsburgh. Because of changing economics, all subsequent circus shows were held in arenas. I said just a minute ago that the number one album this day in 1977 was Barry Manilow, and it was A Carefree Innocent Time. Maybe a little too carefree, maybe a little too sugary, because the number one single that day was by Sean Cassidy.
Seems so upset.
It was
so much.
Bubblegum rock was, all the rage. That, of course, was the original Crystals hit from 1963, done by Sean Cassidy, described as the Justin Bieber of the late 1970s. So, look, if you're gonna listen to Sean Cassidy's version of "To Do Run Run," you've at least got to jump ahead a couple of years to the movie Stripes and let Harold Ramis, as an English as a second language teacher, take it from there.
Okay, that's really very good. I'd like to try it just one more time, and then we'll call it a day. I met her on a Monday, and my heart stood still. Somebody told me that her name was Jill.
Look, I haven't had to learn English as a second language. You could do worse than learning those song lyrics, as your first words.
Yeah.
I think it works out fine for him.
I agree.
Apollo 11, the first mission to land on the moon, launched on this day in 1969. Sad anniversary. We played Harry Chapin a little earlier because on this day in 1981, he was killed in a car crash at the age of 38. He, of course, gave us Cats in the Cradle and this classic called Taxi.
You see, she was gonna be an actress, and I was gonna learn to fly. She took off to find the footlights, I took off for the sky.
And again, there are no guarantees in life, but he was most certainly one of those where people said, how many more classics could have come from such a good songwriter who passed away far too young?
Yeah.
Yeah. You maybe at some point have had Orville Redenbacher popcorn. You might be old enough like me to remember when Orville Redenbacher, who was kind of like the Colonel Sanders of popcorn, was doing his own commercials. The farmer and businessman and popcorn icon was born this day in 1907. He passed away in 1995. Packer fans, of course, remember well. Max McGee, the legend, was born this day in 1932, passed away in 2007. Actor Will Ferrell is 57 years old today. And on this day in 1986, one of the most wonderful musical marriages ever, when Run DMC's Raising Hell album became the first rap album to be certified platinum, in part because of its partnership with Aerosmith to re-envision this hit. Today is Artificial Intelligence Appreciation Day. I choose not to appreciate artificial intelligence. I choose to be frightened to death.
Thank
by
you
the possibilities.
For recognizing us, Pat. We appreciate your love.
This is also Guinea Pig Appreciation Day. If you've ever traveled to Peru, like my wife has, you know that they do appreciate guinea pigs for dinner. It's also, seriously, that's their. They're braised as dinner. You just kind of pluck one, kind of like a lobster tank. You pluck one out and then you prep it. Anyway, on that happy note, today is National Corn Fritters Day.
Ooh.
This is National Cherry Day. We mentioned that earlier. Hello, Door County. This is National Fresh Spinach Day. And you say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, I was one of those who, when I first had fresh spinach, I had to easily be in my 20s, if not my 30s, and went, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
My only exposure to that had been that glop that comes out of cans. which we were told was good because Popeye, you know, would eat it in the cartoons, but it was so gross.
Yeah, absolutely.
And fresh spinach is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Today is Personal Chef Day. You know, so la-di-da for some of you. This is National Rural Transit Day. And, of course, still, be aware of those lasagnas. It's still Lasagna Awareness Month. But let's be aware instead of appreciating not just personal chefs or guinea pigs or artificial intelligence, but people who can sing the national anthem. Taking us out of here is last night's singer of the national anthem at the Home Run Derby. Rick Wilson from the Lincoln Project and Terry Bell from Civic Media and Chad Holmes and more coming up in the second hour of Up North News Radio.